Welcome to Hungry Authors, the show for aspiring authors who will stop at nothing to accomplish their writing and publishing dreams.
We're your hosts, Liz and Ariel, and we're honored that you're here. Let's dive in. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Hungry Authors podcast. We are super psyched to have Kathleen Schmidt here with us today. I'm going to throw it to her first to let her introduce herself to you guys before we start digging deep into the questions. But welcome, Kathleen, and please tell our listeners a little bit about what you do.
Thank you. I am a longtime publishing executive who left my in-house job in the summer of 2022 and decided to start my own PR marketing and branding firm, KMS PR. And then shortly after that, I started writing my Substack, which is Publishing Confidential, which I cover all areas of book publishing and focus on publicity and marketing.
So I think the way we were connected was I started following you, I think because I saw something that Jane Friedman recommended of yours, and I stumbled across your Substack, and I was just immediately like, this is what I've been looking for. There was just so much amazing information. So everyone listening should right now go subscribe to Publishing Confidential because it is a fantastic resource. If you are an author, someone in the industry, there's so much good information there. But Kathleen, let's start with just kind of a fun question. What's your favorite part about being a publicist? Why do you love what you do?
I love what I do because my favorite part of it is working with authors on their career goals. I really like, you know, sort of the collaboration with writers, and you know, it's not just about media, it's about what their branding is like. It's about how do they, you know, how did they bridge one book to the next book if they're in between? What should they be doing? Those kinds of things. So I really enjoy it. And I kind of, you know, it's a great community too, because I also write and I get it. I get them. And I'm very author-centered in my work, period. So that's really my favorite part of it.
Yeah, I think as a former acquisitions editor and now, you know, just continuing to work with authors, I agree. That is always the best part. And it's always exciting to see, you know, the seed of an idea kind of come to life and fruition and then go on to impact readers. That's always really amazing. And you have had a long career with many different positions in publishing. You said you were a publishing executive, and I think your most recent publishing position was in publicity. Is that right?
Yeah, it was. Okay. I was a publicity director for Skyhorse Publishing for 3 years.
Right. Okay. But I know before that you were in like editorial and sales, right? I think.
Before that, I was a literary agent for 3 years. And then before that, I was an associate publisher. So dealing a lot with sales. And for that, I was VP of marketing and publicity. And while I was at Skyhorse, they allowed me to acquire and edit books. So I did that while I was there as well.
Okay. So I guess one question that I have for you is like, why did you decide to kind of land on publicity as it, like, you could have gone in so many different directions when you started your own business. You could have gone in back into agenting or, you know, editorial related something. Like, why did you feel like publicity is the thing that's going to like move the needle for you and authors?
It's, you know, it's funny you asked that question because I've been thinking lately if I should change the name of my company to something, you know, something, something media, instead of, you know, a PR firm, because I don't only do PR, I do a lot of different things. And it was easier for me to just put it under the umbrella of, you know, PR firm, because I already had the website. And because I couldn't think of anything else at the time. But, you know, I would say a good 50-60% of my work is publicity. And then the rest of it is working with writers on book proposals before they start querying. Sometimes I do that. Sometimes I just do, you know, one-off consultations, whether it's on like social media stuff or Substack or things like that. And then, you know, sometimes I just have calls with people and they really just don't know what to do in the middle of their, either at the beginning of their writing career or they're in the middle. And they're between agents or between publishers and stuff like that. So, you know, I say that I take book therapy seriously, and I do give it to people when they need it. But publicity and marketing are kind of getting, you know, molded together these days. So I don't think you could have one without the other. And what I do for a lot of authors is, you know, straight publicity work, whether it be, you know, pitching interviews on podcasts or radio or reaching out to book review editors, stuff like that. But I try not to take on campaigns that are just book review centered, because that's really not what I want to do. And it's about talking with authors and seeing what else they have to offer a media outlet. So it's a lot of different things. I mean, you know, publicity is just what I'm known for mostly in the industry. So I figured that was an easy branding thing, but I have been kicking around the idea of housing it under a different name. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, gotcha. That makes sense. I love that idea of book therapy. such a great term. And it so often turns into that, right? It's like, yes. Just, it's... Yeah, a lot of emotions, a lot of like weight put on books. You know, like, yeah. Ariel and I are both ghostwriters and collaborators in different ways when it comes to book projects. And people's books, they're often seen as, you know, they're a legacy. It's going to last forever. It's going to be around forever. It's sort of permanent, you know, or there's not a lot you can do to change it after a certain point. So. Yeah, people feel a lot of kinds of ways about books and stuff. But speaking of people who have books that they feel deeply about, Ariel and I have a book coming out in August. So we are shamelessly asking people on our podcast about, tips and tricks for what we need to be doing. So as authors who want to give it our best shot, not just for the book, but for the brand and our business and everything that we've built around the book. But people who realize that we don't have connections at the Today Show and we don't really have a message probably fit for the Today Show, we're a little bit scrappy and willing to do the work. What do you usually tell people as, you know, sort of first steps to we've got maybe 7-8 months now till to ramp this thing up? Like, what do we need to be doing?
Well, I think part of it you're already doing with the mm-hmm. podcast, with the Substack. You know, the Substack is really important because you have the email addresses for people, and that's not something you can get on social media. You know, I've written about it before. Social media is really a rental service for an audience. You know, we all rent our audiences there. And, you know, the email newsletters are, I feel like there's going to be a pivot where publishers eventually are going to look at your subscriber numbers instead of your following to see what's what. So I think that's a great idea. I also think, I do lots of different things on TikTok just to mess around. And I did my first stitch today. I'm so proud of myself. And yay! I feel like that's a really effective thing too. You know, if you know of someone who, you know, made a TikTok and you have something to say about it or advice to give. So I did a stitch on one. I saw on Threads, someone was talking about an author who was kind of poo-pooing the idea of being self-published. And then I looked in the comments because I'm nosy and I wanted to see who it was. I saw who it was. So I went on TikTok and found her and listened to and watched her video. And I was like, no, this is not it. So I took a, I clipped a little part of it off and I did a stitch with it. And it's getting, you know, the views are adding up quickly. So I think there's something to that too, especially if you're, you know, if you're, you've written something that's servicey, you know, that people are going to go to use for what they're doing, you know, in their career or in their writing life, in their craft, stuff like that. I think it's really useful.
Yeah, I think with the stitching with TikTok, because you're right, that is a really great strategy. And we are both TikTok experimenters as well. Although I have not done a stitch yet, and I should prioritize that. But what stands out to me about that strategy and with Substack is that both of those platforms are about authentic engagement. And that's what kind of picks up in those places. And you're right that a lot of, you know, book publicity really should be about authentically engaging with your audience and creating this interaction where people feel like they can, like you're accessible, and that they can really get to know you in a deeper way. And that is actually a lot of what selling your book is nowadays, which is very different from what we think of as, you know, traditional media feels very distant from our audience almost.
Yeah.
But it's completely, you know, like inverted in the last few decades.
That's what I see happening. You know, I was thinking about it today too, because before I jumped on with you all, I had an author call and, you know, they were talking about like social media strategy. And I was just saying, you know, you have to relate to your audience. You have to be accessible to them. And it's not like they have to know everything that's going on in your life, but you really do have to understand how to engage with people on different platforms. And like, I'll use Threads as an example because I'm spending a lot of time on there these days. I abandoned my Twitter account pretty much. So I gave up, you know, I didn't have like a huge following. I had like 14,000 or something. And I've only been posting on Threads really since end of October, beginning of November, and I'm already at 13,300. But the thing is, I know how to do it on there because I was on Twitter for 15 years. So it's very natural to me to communicate with people in that way. And that's really the thing that I tell authors all the time. It has to feel natural to you, because if it doesn't, people pick up on that. I just feel like Threads is all about the engagement. It's all about connecting with people. And I was saying this the other day to one of my friends. I said, you know, Threads is where the regular folks are. It's not as media centric as Twitter. And that's kind of nice, actually, because I felt like Twitter was very, you know, once you had your niche on there, you weren't going to really see much else from people. Here, I feel like you have a cross-section of people who left Twitter that were using it for a long time and also use Instagram, but then you have other people who just used Instagram and decided to check this out. So that could get a little weird sometimes because people don't exactly know how to respond in real time. But I have found it a very welcoming place, and I think that it's worthwhile for people who know how to engage.
Yeah, that's really cool. I know on Twitter, you know, I worked my former life, I worked at an educational publisher. And so early on in my career there, I went super deep into educational Twitter. And now I have like 3,000 followers on Twitter/X now. But it's basically useless to me in my current life because they're all like teachers and educators. And that's really like the entirety of my Twitter experience now. And so it's not really, you know, it's nice to be able to say like, oh, I've got almost 3,000 followers on some platform, but I don't really use it or engage there anymore because it's not really relevant to my current life as an author, you know?
Right. And I think, you know, I'm working on a piece for paid subscribers today that's sort of like, what should your social media platform be? Aww. And, you know, I'm laying them all out and just thinking about them. Sometimes when I write my subject, it's really for me and not for other people. Because as I write it, things start to make sense, especially if I'm having, you know, kind of a creative block coming up with stuff for a client or a proposal for a potential client. So I'll write it out. And today, you know, for whatever reason, LinkedIn is on my mind today. And that's really, you know, it has its place, and the place for it is really professional writing. It's, you know, thought leadership, it's self-improvement, those kinds of things on there. And it works for that reason. You know, I don't know, I can't tell you that a ton of book sales come from there, but the engagement part definitely happens for thought leadership on there. So it's sort of like choose your platforms wisely, because if you're not getting engagement, then it's not worth spending time on it, on the platform. That's my feeling right now. And, you know, my exception is probably TikTok, because I am the audience for TikTok scrolling at night. My brain is like mush. I open it up. I don't have to search for anything. It just shows me all the Sex and the City clips that I want.
Yes.
Nice. Now it's starting. And the weirdest thing is, I was talking to someone yesterday about Game of Thrones. I've never seen Game of Thrones clips on there. And today they showed up in my feed.
Yeah. I feel like Ariel and I have been having conversations lately about, just because we've got a book coming out. We're both freelancers. And so, looking for clients, being somewhat visible is a part of what we do. And we've been doing it for years now. And I think we're both feeling a little bit of some exhaustion from having, not just feeling like you have to be everywhere and you have to be engaging, but we're wondering what's working. Is it worth it? Sometimes something kind of pops off, but a lot of times it doesn't. And so, maybe hopefully your forthcoming piece will shine light on this. But what do you think just about that, like, it feels so so tiring sometimes to feel like you have to be out there? And I know this is a little bit cliche, and I hear it from writers all the time, and I feel it all the time about how, like, I just want to do the writing, right? I don't want to do the, like, up and be a person online part of it. How do you sort of, I mean, do you ever feel that yourself as a writer who kind of has to be out there? Like, how do you deal with that?
Not well. I mean,
okay, good. Honestly, that makes me feel better.
I talk about it in therapy almost every week.
Okay. Yeah.
Because it's so unnatural to me to be front facing this much. And that's, I feel like for the past few months, all I've been doing is being front-facing, whether it's, you know, the Substack or consultations with people or doing a lot of podcast interviews or being on social, you know, media, doing videos, posting them on TikTok, posting them on Instagram. And sometimes I just want to crawl under the covers on the bed and be like, I won't talk to anybody. I want to do this anymore. I want to go back. I want to, like, lead a quiet life in a cabin somewhere where I don't have any Wi-Fi. And, you know, if I wasn't doing this for a living, I would probably quit every social media platform and just not bother with it. But we can't. So we cope. And what I have found for myself is just, you know, no is a complete sentence. And there are just there are things I've had to turn down and because they didn't, you know, fit in with what I'm doing right now. And there are, you know, some clients I haven't taken on. You know, you can't do every single thing. So it's sort of like, look at what's working. You know, I still believe that Substack is a fantastic marketing vehicle when you have a business, because I started my Substack last March and didn't have my website up until, like, probably around Thanksgiving in the fall. And all of my clients came from the Substack, like, everything did. So it's really a great marketing vehicle for that. And then, you know, I started doing some videos on Instagram just to test out the waters, because I hate doing videos. I'm so uncomfortable when I do them. And I wanted to see how people, you know, would take my advice, or, you know, just kind of how people would react to video. And it, as I got feedback on that, I started getting more confident about maybe posting something on TikTok, because one of my friends was always like, you have to just, I'll film you. You just have to do them. And I'm like, no, I don't want to. So I finally did them and I'm pretty comfortable. It's fine. But again, like I'm not pouring any kind of expectation into what I do for TikTok or my little Instagram videos. Where I put the most effort is Substack, without a doubt. And it's okay, like if I'm not on Threads for a couple of days, it's okay if I'm not participating in like every Facebook group known to man or posting on LinkedIn all the time. I know where my audience is and I know where I want to cultivate them. So I do it mostly on Substack. If there's a piece of advice I could give you, it's if that's where the bulk of your audience is going to be, then put more effort into that instead of trying to spread yourself thin.
Yeah, that is good advice and makes a lot of sense. And I think it does help to relieve some of the pressure that you feel like, I definitely feel this often too, to just be like, oh my gosh, I trying to show up on Instagram, trying to show up on Facebook, trying to show up on LinkedIn and Substack and everything. And I can only do one of those things really well. And that's the thing is
right.
I often have to ask myself, like, which of those things do I feel like I can do well right now? And which of those things do I want to do really well? And yeah, for me, it is always my newsletter too. And anything else is just like gravy on top. Cool.
Right. It's also with the newsletter, you feel like after you write one, I mean, at least I do, I feel like I really accomplished something.
Yes.
I don't feel like I accomplish much by posting on Instagram or Threads, or when I post it on Twitter a lot, I would take a step back and be like, wait, how is this serving me? And that's a question you have to ask yourself too. And I tell authors to ask themselves that all the time. How is this serving me? How is the platform serving me? How is, you know, what I'm doing as far as, you know, my brand, how is that serving me? And you kind of have to do a self audit in that way sometimes and sit down and write down all the things you're doing. And then when you have it in front of you and you look at the list, you can be like, oh, like, why am I even doing this? You know, because you see it on paper for the first time. So I think, you know, it's not an easy exercise because you all of a sudden you feel like, God, I'm doing way too much. But it also helps you weed out what you don't need to spend time on.
Yeah. So on the topic of Substack, and mm-hmm. I love that exercise. I have heard from agents and acquisitions editors, publishers recently, that more and more of them are starting to look at Substack as kind of an, you know, acquisitions ground. Like agents are going to Substack now and looking for writers who are cultivating community there. Why do you think that is? Like, what do you think is different about Substack than some of the other email providers? And like, why do you think people are kind of gravitating towards that? That's part number one. And part number two, do you think it's going to last?
Part number one, I'll answer first. I think that one of the reasons why it's easy for agents to go there for, you know, acquisitions grounds is just there's proof of concept there. So what that means is, you know, if I'm writing my Substack about the publishing industry or marketing and branding, and people are engaging me in that topic, and I'm writing back to them, you know, responding to comments and everything, and I have a robust subscriber base, I can show an agent, look, there's proof that I have an audience, and they'll listen to me. They want to read what I write. And that's a much safer bet than I have 100,000 Twitter followers, but the algorithm is weird. So I'm not even sure if anybody sees, you know, what I post up there. You know, there's value in being able to reach people in their inboxes, you know, whether that's weekly or biweekly. And I think any publisher would be smart to use that as, you know, kind of a scouting ground for books they might want to acquire or agents for clients they want to acquire, because you have, it's almost like a safety net. You know, you could see how people are engaging on there, and you know, someone's coming to you with the email addresses in hand. Whether that's going to last or not, I think it will. Personally, I know that they, you know, they're trying to figure out like different revenue streams at Substack, the company itself. But I think, you know, we're in a really good time frame for newsletters right now. And I think that's more and more, that's where you're going to see, you know, mainstream media go too. I mean, I think one of the reasons why, you know, people aren't looking at mainstream media so much anymore is because you can get a lot of news from different Substack newsletters.
Yeah, totally. And don't you feel like this is just totally, this is anecdotal and like an armchair theory thing, but I was thinking the other day about how Substack feels to me kind of like the closest you can get to writing for readers that's not a book, kind of, you know what I mean? Like a lot of my clients are digital entrepreneurs and a lot of them have big email addresses or, you know, email lists. And that is still a valuable asset and seen by publishers as a valuable asset. But a lot of these people, they built their email addresses off of free downloads, free freebies. And then people stuck around for one reason or another, but you know, they're trying to sell them something in general. And just because they sign up for to get your freebie about how to build a business, you know, and bought something from you necessarily doesn't mean that they are going to want to read your book or whatever. But when, but Substack readers, subscribers are readers, like they are there to read something, which feels like to me anyway, the most targeted kind of email list you can possibly have, you know?
Very true. Yeah. I feel that way too, because just from notes I get from people, they do really read it. And I'm always shocked that they read it, but I'm also a reader of them. So I subscribe to way too many, but, you know, that's turned into sort of my night reading. You know, I go through my Substack inbox on the app and see what I missed during the day and I catch up on reading. And there are a lot of great writers on there too. So, you know, I think I am incredibly fortunate and I'm grateful for it. I found a niche that nobody was filling on there. And I didn't even know that, you know, I kind of went over, I decided on a, you know, on a whim to try Substack. I had like 150 email addresses from MailChimp from trying to do this newsletter like 4 or 5 years ago. And I was like, well, if people delete it, they delete it, whatever. And then it just kind of, you know, snowballed from there. And it's amazing. And I'm, you know, I love the community that I'm building there. And that's the other thing too. It's a great place to build a community.
Yeah, I have already seen that just in my, you know, I've been on Substack for less than a couple months now. And I'm already seeing that for my newsletter as well. I moved it over there from ConvertKit and just kind of immediately started seeing engagement and getting comments on posts and people actually respond to my notes. And like, I was like, I don't get this much engagement on any other platform. And I think you're right, both of you, because the people who are there are readers and they are there to engage. There's a little bit of like a purpose mindset that people come with when they are on Substack and they're looking for those opportunities. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, it's kind of like self-selection too, because if you're there, you're there to read things. You know, it's kind of like going to a library or a bookstore. You know, you're going to those places for a specific reason. So Substack is a destination page. You know, it's that people go there for specific reasons, and then they find newsletters to subscribe to kind of, you know, tailor their experience. And I think it's brilliant, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So are there any people, any types of authors or, you know, topics or anything like that, that you would say is not a good fit for Substack? Like, would you tell every author who comes to you, go get on Substack right now? Or would you say it's going to be better for some people than others?
It's going to be better for some people than others. It really depends on what the person has to say. So, you know, I have talked to authors where I tell them, if it's going to be more like a journal entry, don't do it, because you're not giving people anything in particular. You know, you kind of have to have a very clear idea of what the Substack is going to be and what you're offering people and what, you know, what they're going to get from subscribing to you. And if you don't have any idea of that, you know, I can only help to a certain point. And then if you really don't have an idea or think you're only going to write something, you know, once every 2 months, it might not be worth it because it's just sitting there then. I see it more as a growth opportunity, you know, and a good brand extension, but you have to participate.
Yeah, totally. I will say, though, so I subscribe to one that I think it's called Emily Writes. Well, I don't know. Don't go look for that. I might be wrong. But it's this woman. It's her first name starts with an E. I'm having trouble remembering. But anyway, she and it's a really popular one. And she does offer value, but it's mostly like entertainment. Like her voice is so strong and she's so funny. She kind of reminds me of like old school blogging, you know, like Glennon Doyle back in the Momastery days, where it's like, could I have verbalized to you exactly what I got from going to her blog? Like, not really, except that I loved it and it was really funny and she had seemed to have a strong point of view, but she wasn't like teaching me anything. She was just like entertaining me. It's kind of like how I feel when I'm the ideal audience for TikTok too. I become just a TikTok scroller in the evening. And I find myself watching a decent amount of like popular TikTokers who are just like, get ready with me, morning vlog, mom of two, you know, that sort of a thing. And, you know, like my, like, I don't know, book proposal positioning kind of brain goes like, what's her like brand? Or like, what am I like getting out of this? Right. And it's mostly just like companionship and entertainment. And somebody said, so I saw a comment the other day on TikTok that was like, you're my comfort watch or something like that. It was like, I'm having a bad day. I'm going to go watch what Avery's doing on TikTok, you know? Anyway, I feel like I do subscribe to, there are Substacks that feel like that to me. You know what I mean? Where it's like, it's feeling like I feel you can't just be inconsistent and use it like a diary, but there are people, I think, making a space for themselves that just like to write and use it like old school blogging, but they have a strong voice. They have a point of view. But they're not like teaching me anything. They're just kind of writing in this unique, kind of like a memoir. You know what I mean? Almost like, but in that way that they have such a strong voice. And I thought, and they're hugely popular, which is cool, really cool too.
I think that's that's definitely a gift. You know,
yes, right.
You're a writer and you could do that. I don't know that I could do that.
I don't know if I could either.
But I get your point about that, because on TikTok, I follow this woman. Her name on TikTok is Cindy Mindy. Uh-huh. And all she does is dance. Like, she's an older woman.
Yeah.
She dances really well. She dances to like old school hip hop and club music and stuff like that. She's from New Jersey. And you know, one of her TikToks around Christmas went viral. That's how I found out about her. And now I follow her. She's just pure joy. That's it. I can't say that I don't get anything out of it. I get entertained.
Exactly.
And that's a hard trick to pull off in this day and age. Like, I will literally stay for her entire video, or sometimes she does like live dancing, like for, you know, to have like a little dance party and everything. I'm like, I watch that. I'm all in, because you can't find that kind of joy in a lot of corners of the internet. So when you do find it, you want to watch it. And it just says everything about what people are interested in seeing right now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I know. Yeah, because I follow a decent amount of people on TikTok who talk about how to grow on TikTok, because I want to grow on TikTok. So there's creators who are, branding people, marketing people, and they have a lot of great stuff to say. But they are a lot about like positioning, you know, whatever, the normal things that you hear, have a message, teach things, you know, do series and stuff like that. And it's not bad advice. I think it's great advice, and a lot of people do that well. But then I think about a lot of the most popular people that I follow. They're not doing any of that. They're just sharing their day, you know? And I'm like, not that that necessarily translates to writing a book or book sales, but just not underestimating the power of entertainment and, I don't know.
Companionship, though. Yeah. Because, you know, if... I mean, TikTok really blew up during the pandemic.
Right. And,
you know, and I, you know, you read all of these pieces about loneliness that are coming out and everything. And there is something to that, you know. I think you know, in a lot of ways, those places make us feel left less alone. So I know, you know, when I get comments on a newsletter that I've written, especially if it's very like heavy on the, you know, teaching people about publishing, I always, you know, get nice notes from people, you know, saying how much it helped them feel less like they didn't know anything, or, you know, less in solitaire, you know. it's a really cool thing to see a community come together. And that's like, I don't care what anybody says, people want to be part of something.
Yeah, definitely. I keep thinking in my head just about this idea of like the platforms that are blowing up are the places where people can authentically engage. And even like just, you know, offering companionship. I guess my question is like, but does that translate to book sales? Because like I, you know, and I feel this tension within myself of like, okay, I have this new Substack. I want it to grow. And so I'm really focused on offering, you know, high value pieces right now. But I'm not gonna lie, part of what attracted me to Substack was also the glimmer of possibility that I could also push, you know, put out like more personal essays, and I could be a little bit more experimental on this platform. And I see other authors who are doing this where they like, you know, they have one like line of, or one category of stuff that they publish on Substack that's, you know, high value stuff for their readers. But then sometimes it's like a much more personal thing. And I'm like, I don't know how to balance those things in a way that continues to grow your platform on a social media platform. But that's, I think, what so many authors, including myself, are looking for. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that? How to like balance the value and personal stuff?
I tend to pull, I have pulled back a lot on personal stuff since, you know, when I was in my 30s, in my mid late 30s, early 40s, I thought that writing a lot of personal pieces was a way for people to get to know me. And after many, many years on social media, I realized I wanted to pull back on that part and have a personal life. So whatever people read in my Substack, and I don't do personal pieces that often, or see on social media, it's a very small sliver of what actually, you know, is going on in my life, because my kids are older, they want privacy. You know, my husband and I have a deal. He's very offline. He does read my newsletter, but he's very offline. And our deal is, you know, I can't talk about what he does, you know, on social media or anything. He's a music industry executive. I can't really talk about what he's working on. And I respect that, you know. And as far as my own stuff is concerned, I don't put anything out there that I don't want my kids to read, because, you know, their friends follow me. And it just, as your kids get older, you start to realize like they deserve a private life, you know. And I just don't, I think I found a good balance in allowing people to know me well enough and to feel like they really know me without really knowing me, if you know what I mean. You know, so I, you know, when I have something to tag it to, like I did a newsletter for, you know, Mental Health Awareness Month, and I talked about my own experiences with depression. I wrote a newsletter in June about my last dog passing away. It's universal stuff that people can relate to, so I don't have to make it so personalized to me.
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. And some people do, I mean, for some people, it definitely works. And I think going back to, you know, Liz, what you were saying about voice, that comes into play too, because voice definitely sells. And especially if you're like a memoir writer, that, you know, a strong voice has to be there, and is part of cultivating a readership and offering value. There is value in being able to express a universal emotion in a way that other people who may or may not have been in that exact situation can still relate to.
Exactly. Like the TikTokers that we were talking about, and the Substack writers that, you know, like the Glennon Doyle-y ones, like they have a lot in common with memoir. Well, Glennon Doyle is a memoirist, but it's that sort of intangible thing that we have trouble verbalizing and teaching, in that it's intangible. It's sort of a know it when you see it, hear it when you see it. You know, like when I worked on Lucinda Halpern's book, Get Signed, that's coming out. You know, we got to interview a lot of agents and editors when we did that book. So many of them, when it came to memoir, they had a lot of trouble explaining exactly what it is. But it's just, you know, you hear it when you see it. People who've just, they've got a strong craft, they've got a way of connecting, and you can take courses and you can certainly get better. But some of it is kismet, kind of, you know, that's not helpful, but it just is true. Yeah.
It's true. I mean, I know, you know, even now when I help people with proposals, or, you know, even give them a bit of feedback on their manuscripts, it's all nonfiction that I look at. And I know it when I see it. I also know when I see something that's not great.
Right. You know?
Mm-hmm. It takes a really strong writer to get it out there in a good way. And, you know, I say this to people too in consultations: if you can't whittle down what your book is about in three sentences, how are you ever going to talk to anybody about it? You know, it's not for everyone. Your book is not for everyone. So then you have to be able to talk about it to the people who it's for. You know,
yeah, I push them to one sentence.
You know, a lot of people don't know how to do that. And it's a skill set I learned because I've been doing book publicity for so long, and you have to be able to do an elevator pitch. You know, authors are, you know, it's very much an insular kind of world. And, you know, once you have to put your book out into the world and start talking about it, it could feel like, you know, you're a deer in headlights. Like, what do I do? What do I say? And I don't think a lot of direction for that is coming from, you know, publishing houses. I think authors are sort of left to float on their own.
Yeah, that's so true, which makes resources like your Substack newsletter so incredibly valuable, because you're right. Publishers are not really giving that advice. They're kind of telling authors, like, go figure it out and come back to us when you have. But it's not easy to learn this stuff and to navigate all of these waters and to kind of wrestle with all of these questions about who do I want to be online and who do I want to be, you know, in my real life, and how do those two things kind of intersect?
No, that's exactly right. Totally. Yeah.
Well, this is so helpful and we really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Kathleen. Where can people find you? Obviously their Substack is the best place, but sounds like TikTok is also really good.
Yeah, TikTok. I'm Kath M. Schmidt on TikTok and Threads and Instagram. And my website is kmspr.com. And you could see like everything about me, what services I offer and stuff like that on there.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you're a hungry author and you want to learn more about our community and courses, head over to hungryauthors.com. Remember, you have a story and a message worth sharing, and if you've got the hunger, you can make it happen.